Good morning and welcome to the Tuesday, March 3rd edition of Byers & Company. Sheriff Antonio Brown in the studios. We'll have tickets to give away to see the Illini, courtesy of First Mid, and our Heinkel's countdown to opening day. 8 o'clock hour starts now.
Byers & Company, WSOY, 1340 AM, 103.3 FM, streaming live at nowdecatur.com.
Good morning and welcome. We're back here on a Tuesday. Hey, by the way, remind me to tell you about Puerto Rico when we get into the conversation about the presidential primaries.
All right.
They moved theirs up from like June to March to matter.
Okay.
51 delegates up for grabs. I mean, that's a lot more than a lot of states here in the United States of America.
Yeah.
So a whole different ground game this year in Puerto Rico. You ever been?
Nope.
It's a really pretty cool place.
I'd like to.
Yeah. Although when you fly in, it's one of those cities where you fly in next to the buildings and you go down really quick.
Oh, that's
wow.
Weird.
You know what I'm talking about?
Mm-hmm.
Like, because it's a little island and you got to land a big jet. And it's like you look out and like, okay, there's our buildings right out the window. Good morning. Welcome. That laughter is familiar. That is Sheriff Brown. Some would refer to him as Antonio. Some would say Tony. Most would say Chubby.
That's it.
Just call him friend. We go back a long ways. Your birthday was March 1st.
It was.
That's what Nick was telling me.
Yeah, yeah.
Inside information. Do anything special?
I tell you what, I had the opportunity to relax, but went to a visitation for a great friend of ours, Tommy Hauser.
Yeah, and how was that?
It's sad. It just, I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I played football with him. His wife and I graduated. We're classmates together. And he's just such a great guy. And to see that, it just kind of, life is short.
You know, it really is. And I want to ask you about, I mean, clearly you've been in and around one side of this across the board for a long time. But you talk about tragedy. I think there's at least 7, maybe 9 dead now down in Tennessee. And in Nashville, you see a city, like a downtown, get hit like that. Is there anything scarier than a nighttime weather event like this? I mean, that rolls in the middle of the night.
No, because, you know, individuals are asleep or what have you. They don't have the opportunity or to prepare themselves to seek shelter or what have you. So that is in itself is horrible.
And when you think about it, you know, it's on your watch. I mean, is that... You've been around it a long time.
Yes.
But is it a different feeling knowing that if something hits the fan like that, that's out of everybody's control, you're now the guy?
Yes, it's scary. That being said, though, we have to try to do our very best to make sure that we have things in place as far as people in place, and also we have a lot of resources. And those are some of the things as far as the ICS, which is the incident command system that we all have, and with the state, with IEMA, we all have to work together collectively in order to get through troublesome times like that.
And what about the coronavirus? Are people having conversations at a local level?
I haven't really heard a whole bunch of people talking about it. We think about, you know, you think about the coronavirus and you think about how many people actually die from the flu.
Oh, I know. But we were talking about this earlier. I'm the same way. And I'm doing what I can do. And it's really not, you know, much of this is in anybody's physical control.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're all going to get caught like a deer in the headlights because one of these is going to be the one. And we and the next thing you know, we're in the stand. You got to keep an eye on it.
Yes.
But I don't know what you can do. I'm hoping that people are talking to each other, you know, that the state's talking to local, that the federal people are talking to state. There was a disaster averted when was it Alabama? They were going to bring some of these infected patients to quarantine on an old military base, but when the feds landed, it was clear to the locals, including the sheriff and, uh-huh. and the chairman. Feds didn't know what they were doing,
exactly.
and Trump stopped it at the behest of a couple of congressmen from Alabama. But do you worry about that kind of thing? Like the feds just show up, and the next thing you know, you're warehousing you know people who are quarantined.
Yeah, no, it's scary. And again, it's like you have to use your resources as far as contact people, and you have to listen to your constituents. For those individuals, as far as in D.C. or what have you, in order to get their response from the president. to stop that from actually happening within that area.
Well, it is. I worry about INEPT more than anything, you know, or these national organizations working with each other and the CDC talking to, you know, I hope it's nothing. I hope it's Y2K. I hope it's SARS, it's MERS, it's, you know, all these things that we're going to take out a gigantic chunk of the population. But right now, your dangers of having something like what happened in Nashville happen to you are a much greater threat. Or, you know, heart disease, or as you said, the regular flu. I think the flu so far in this country has killed 26,000 people since January.
Wow.
That's a lot of people. I don't know why do we have irrational fears? I mean, based on math, you know, if you're just going to play the house, you're going to go to Vegas, you get in your car, that Raptor, or you drive your truck off, your chances of you getting killed in that are a lot higher than you getting killed by a gun.
Correct.
But in this country, we don't think of those two things as the same. We have a much larger fear of guns, and that's where the politicians spend all their time talking. Why is it, as people, that we have irrational fears based on just the math?
I think it's the unknown, because it's something that's not commonly, you know, we experience. So therefore, it's the unknown. And, you know, we have this sense of control that we feel that we don't have.
We're behind
control.
The wheel.
Exactly. Then, you know, we don't have control over, then, you know, something much greater can actually happen.
All right. What year did you start at the Macon County Sheriff's Office?
1990. Yes.
So I'm looking back to see who would have been the sheriff. That would have been
Lee Holzapfel.
Lee Holzapfel. Okay. So he was there from 1986 to 1998.
Yes.
And then Roger Walker followed from 98 to 2003.
Yes.
And Jerry Dawson in 2000. Then Thomas Schneider. And then Howard Buffett did the year.
Yes.
And then you.
Yes.
You look back at the history. I mean, is there a wall down there with all these pictures?
Yeah. There is.
Yeah.
There is. It's a lot of history down there. And you think about, go back to 1829 when William Warnick was the very first sheriff in Macon County, and he was a personal friend of Abraham Lincoln. So it's a lot of history with this office.
Yeah, it seems like they weren't around for very long at the beginning.
Yeah.
Were these just like 2-year terms, or was everybody dying early?
I don't know as far as how that whole situation had happened. You had some that actually came back and did second terms or what have you.
So. Yeah. Well, it is a pretty – I think about the change in our country when I look at this list, right? Just in our lifetime, you go back to 1966, and since then there have been 9 sheriffs since in our lifetime.
Yes.
And 2 of them African American.
Yes.
And because that list before 1966 was pretty white.
Yeah, no, it was. And you got to think about that. The first one, I mean, was Roger. That wasn't just for Macon County. That's for the entire state of Illinois.
First African American sheriff in the state of Illinois was Roger Walker.
Correct. It's 4 of us now.
Yeah. Rocket, as he was known to friends.
Ramjet.
And Jet.
Yeah.
Yeah. of course, like everybody else, he kind of paid his dues and just like you, it worked in a lot of different areas.
Yes.
But do you see progress in our country? I guess when I look at these lists, you can go back only 9 people.
Yes.
And see a whole different America than maybe you saw in 1966.
Yes. You see some progress. We still have a long ways to go. I just think that when I always tell people to know your why, I talk about as far as know why you do things. And I think a lot differently than others. I think about, if I don't show up, how's it going to affect others? I've always, you know, put, you know, others before myself and my service to the community prior to myself. So those are the things that actually drive me.
And when you think about the country as a whole, I know we always have work to do, but there has been undeniable progress.
There has.
Yet at the same time, I'm not sure relationships between law enforcement and certain segments of the population have ever been worse.
No, you're correct. And I think that we need to do better as far as communicating. You know, the thing is sad is that we all as humans have more in common than we do differences.
Yeah.
And I think we need to, you know, concentrate on that as well. Another thing is, there's such a long history when it comes to law enforcement in the communities, and those situations themselves, those things needs to be to look at that history and to be able to take the criticism and to have that conversation. Individuals will say, well, you know, I shouldn't be held responsible for what my ancestors had done. We everybody agrees with that. But I think a lot of times people don't want to acknowledge the history and to address that, and then we can move on from it. So I think those things need to happen for us to move from it.
I don't disagree with any of that, but I think there is a disconnect with certain folks in a community that just Your job is to arrest people who break laws.
Correct. To enforce the laws. And my whole thing is sometimes we talk about as far as arresting people that breaks the law, but this is one thing that I often tell people. If individuals don't get the proper services,
yeah,
you know, for breaking those laws, a lot of times people want to look at the end result. They don't want to look at the cause.
I agree with that 1,000%. I think we're doing in this community, just a couple of blocks north of
exactly.
us with this treatment facility, things that no other community is doing, at
Correct.
Least at that level. But at the same time, we've got recently city council meetings, other local officials.
Mm-hmm.
There's a movement out there that wants to argue we should be able to drive impaired. I mean, it's gotten ridiculous in some sectors.
It
Tony.
Has. I always tell people that, you know, sometimes people don't realize something's an issue until it happens in their household. Also, something that...
But did you ever think you would live to see, literally people lobbying for the right to drive high?
No, I hadn't. I always tell people, as far as me as law enforcement officer, that the world looks entirely different from inside that squad car. And I think that we just need to, you know, you can't judge someone to walk a mile in their shoes. And I think that a lot of individuals don't see as far as what we go through. And this is one example I use as far as when I had individuals from that group and they went through that simulator and they had that active shooter. And after that, he kind of like, I had no idea, but I think we all need to do better to communicate.
Well, and I also think that the police, sheriff, get lumped into one category, that they're just anti-drugs. When you spend your whole life seeing the downside of that,
yes.
when you see the victims, including the drug addicts,
yes.
You see their families, you see the pain, you see the overdoses, you see the death, you see what it can do to a community, to crime rates.
Yes.
We had the chief in yesterday. You know, the difference, if 3 or 4 people in this county
mm-hmm.
get clean,
right.
it will impact your crime rates because
Correct.
Of the petty theft, the robbery, the stuff that circles around drug addiction. It will impact crime rates.
It will.
Or 4 people.
It will. And those are things that we want to see. I mean, that being said, that we have to hold people accountable, too, you know, as far as some of their actions.
And what about drug dealers? I see this, too, like that there is this. I get that there's maybe not economic equality or things that need to happen. All the stuff you laid out is absolutely right. But there are people who are profiting off these overdoses and these drug addictions. And you cannot paint them as good guys.
No, not at all. Those individuals need to be held accountable. They shouldn't be a part of our society. They need to pay their debt to society as far as what they're doing to destroy it. They have to pay for
that. Yet in society, and particularly in the African-American community in this state, some of the politics involved with even the legalizing of cannabis, mm-hmm. I'm not even talking about that. If a young man was pulled over with 400 bullets in his car mm-hmm. and a gun, we would not be giving him an award on Saturday night.
Correct.
But 400 doses of heroin, which could be 400 overdoses, why do we not treat those things the same way? Back to that math and numbers question.
Yeah. We just need to hold people accountable. It's not right. We just look at things two differently ways, and I don't think it's right. People need to be held accountable for the damage they do to a community.
Yeah, and drug dealers, by the way, from
yes.
the cartels down
yes.
in South America, they're
yes.
not going to give up their day job because we've legalized cannabis.
Correct.
Is it some people's thought that they're just going to go home? Well, we've got enough profits. We'll just call it a day.
Well, you'll hear people, they say, well, you know, I've heard a professional athlete made a comment that, you know, we shouldn't even have this conversation anymore as far as, you know, weed doesn't hurt anyone. I got to tell people, I said, you know, I taught DARE. I still do believe it's a gateway drug. And my whole thing is it's legal now in the state, but you know, you need to follow the laws when it comes to that. Just don't get behind a wheel and drive a vehicle.
Yeah.
And follow all the laws.
Tell me about the sheriff's budget. I know you were able to trim some this year. Clearly the county's trying to stay level and not
yes.
raise taxes. That
yes.
that puts everybody in a position. I always feel like law enforcement probably never has the resources they really need, although we've had an incredible benefactor here that's helped offset
yes.
that. What's the sheriff's budget look like overall?
Right now, we're good. So I was able to, and I'll just give you a brief synopsis that with 4 upper-level command officers positions I didn't replace through attrition, that in itself was about a $600,000 savings to the county within itself. As far as another revenue source that we have, as far as the federal detainees acts we hold, I was able to get those numbers back up too. So those are some of the things that we're doing. We got a lot going on. We've been very, very grateful for the benefactor that we have and able to get the equipment we need. Some things that I'm looking to trim is to with some of the dispatch costs that we actually have. So we've just ordered something to help our civil process that will actually help get that bill down as well. So we're doing a lot in order to try to make sure we're fiscally responsible.
All right. So take your sheriff's hat off and put your I guess old campaign hat on and explain to me where we are in this process of this ever evolving discussion about the last election. I mean, just where are we in this timeline?
Right, it's just the it's in the courts.
Yeah.
And we are in the process now is trying to get some things worked out as far as to start the recount itself.
Okay, and are we still waiting for this judge in Champaign to make a determination, or has that already happened?
Well, no, it hasn't happened as of yet, but there's still some other process that needs to take place as far as in order for her to make that decision. So,
okay, yeah. I mean, are we looking at like fall, December? I mean, you know, how long will this process take? Do you think?
I don't know how long the process itself will take, but it should come up here pretty soon.
Yeah, but will there be like an appeals process involved in all of this?
Once we get all the results and stuff like that from them, then we'll look at that.
Okay. So right now we're just still kind of.
Yeah.
All right. Has this been a drag?
I tell you what, I'm very grateful as far as everything. And this sounds crazy, but I'm very grateful for everything I've gone through because it has done nothing but made me stronger. It really has. And it's a eye awakening experience. And that's one thing I always say. I said, I focus on my job and I know my why. I'm very grateful and and nobody knows this, we're going to know now, but for the last 2 weeks, I've been going to Stephen Decatur High School. I mean, not the middle school, and mm-hmm. talking to some kids, and that is something that I'm very grateful to. And I didn't realize that some of these kids that I was speaking with was some of the issues that was happening up in Forsyth. Mm-hmm. So the very first Tuesday I went. We didn't have any issues that weekend at the mall in Forsyth at all. I went back the second Tuesday, didn't have any issues at all. So I'll be back there again today talking to the same group. But it's just to be able to spend some time with these individuals and to actually listen to them and let them know that we're here for them and I'm here to support them. So it doesn't, you know, although that I'm very busy,
yeah,
it's worth taking time out of my day in order to
Well, it
try
can make a
help.
Difference in setting an example. Sometimes the kids don't have an example
exactly.
to follow except what they see their fellow kids doing on the streets. And,
exactly.
All right. And then I also think teenage behavior has been teenage behavior forever.
It has.
We were lucky. Right? You just turned 51?
Two.
Okay, I'm 53, so I was a year older than Tony in school. We had fights every day at Eisenhower High
yes,
School.
Yes.
I mean, is that an exaggeration?
No. We had them.
I just don't think the adults made a big deal out of it. You know, they separated the kids. You maybe got detention. But we didn't elevate it. And I'm not saying that's the exact same behavior today. Uh-huh. But I think as adults and the older we get, the more we blow that up, than maybe when we saw it as 17-year-olds, it didn't seem like a big deal.
Yeah, we didn't have social media either.
Well, this is true.
And I think once, you know, because a lot of times people, you know, they get taunted and everything else like that.
There's a lot more that plays in.
It's so much more that takes a part of that as
well. But a business owner ought to be able to go, look, you can't do this stuff here.
Correct. Yeah, they have a business to run, and if they, you know, if they put themselves in the shoes of the business owner, I would hope they would look at it the same way as well.
Yeah, but before everybody in society gets all crazy with this hell in a handbasket thing, I just ask you to generally look back at your own teenage life. Kids have acted like fools forever.
It's
part of being kids.
They have. I tell you what, so I'm telling you, going to Tommy's visitation, I'm telling you, that was it hit me like a ton of bricks, Brian. It really did.
All right. Well, Tony, keep up the great work, and thank you for the outreach to the kids at Stephen Decatur.
Yes.
Sometimes they got to have a strong role model or somebody to intervene. You've done this a lot in a quiet way. Not that you were sit here and take credit for it, but I've watched you pick people out, people that show up and run their mouth about something or have some sort of anti, and you kind of take those people to the side and try to be a mentor to them.
Exactly.
And I've watched that, and I've seen you do it up close, and not everyone does that.
Yeah. And like I said, I go to Stephen Decatur, and I told this guy, I said, you haven't seen me posting anything on Facebook, taking pictures. You haven't seen me with the media, what have you, because it's not about that. This is actually trying to do good in the community and to be a positive force for those individuals as well.
Macon County Sheriff Antonio Brown, we appreciate it. Thank you. We'll see
you
next month.
Thank you.